I wish you would stop talking to yourself and pretending it's me, because it's creepy when I'm still alive. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're discussing recent animated movies. We talk about Soul, Onward, Wolfwalkers, Mitchells vs. the Machines, and Raya and the Last Dragon.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hi.
And Nick Glover.
Hey.
And we are here live in person. Eventually, I'm going to get tired of saying that. I know that I keep saying it.
It's going to be a while, though, isn't it?
But it's just so great.
I know.
We're here in the basement studios of Tim's house, back in the saddle again with our normal soundboard, our normal microphones.
The recently remodeled basement studio.
I'm facing an entirely different direction than usual.
It's a different
it's
wall.
Pretty crazy. But we are here today to talk about some recent animated movies that came out. It's possible you slept on them. It's possible that you watch them, maybe with your kids or nibblings or something. Either way, these are great movies. We all think they're really fun. They are good for all ages, and they bring something to the table. So we're going to talk about them, and let's start with...
And they're all streaming.
Oh, yes, they are all streaming.
Yeah, they are all streaming.
So actually, I want to start with something that Nick and I didn't watch, but Tim, you said you did watch it.
The movie
Soul.
Soul, which won the Oscar for Best Animated Film 2021.
Now, we haven't seen that yet. It's not that we haven't wanted to. It's
2021?
Gotten around. They had the Oscars.
They win the Oscar. Yeah. It won the 2021 Oscar, even though it was released in 2020.
Yeah, Oscars are in March, right?
Because that's how they make Oscars work.
But it's for last year's Oscar.
Yes. The Oscar for this year is for things that came out last year.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
But it's still called the 2021 Oscars?
It is.
It was held in 2021.
Yes. It seems backwards.
That's how it's always been.
I know.
Anyway, the movie Soul, Tim.
Soul.
Did you like the movie?
Yeah. I liked it a lot. It's... obviously we're going to spoil some things about these movies, but, I think one of the things that Pixar does really well is it sets up that things are going to go one direction, and very frequently they take a turn into another direction, and you feel like the whole thing's going to be kind of a romp. There's a character who feels he's died by accident, and it seems like it's going to be a romp through Pixar's afterlife concept, maybe a little bit like Inside Out.
Sure.
As a romp through a little girl's brain.
Like what if ghosts had feelings?
Yeah. And it's not, that's not it. That's not what it does. It's much more in depth than that. It sets up some conclusions that aren't where it's really going, which I kind of like.
How did you feel about it as an atheist? I think one of the reasons I didn't want to watch it necessarily was since I assumed it was a show about the afterlife and heaven and how we all have souls. And I just was kind of like, for me. But would you say that there's something in there for the average atheist to
enjoy? Well, I mean, what I always say about something like anything that's got magic in it, it's like, well, I know magic isn't real, but if it's real in this world, then fine.
Well, sure.
So for Soul, it's like there are souls and there's an afterlife. Life and there's a before life, and there's no religion reference at all.
Okay.
So it's not about whether heaven or hell are a function of a certain religion.
Or if you're a good person or not.
Right.
Okay.
And the characters that they create that are these actually kind of fucking cool cubist Picasso style characters that are the characters that run the afterlife. And they're all named Jerry, except for the accountant who's named Terry.
Oh, sure.
But
classic Pixar humor.
Yeah. But those characters, they don't look like angels. They're not referred to as angels.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it is, as an atheist, kind of wonky to be watching a movie about souls, but it doesn't feel like a afterlife and frankly, there's a before life part of it, too.
Okay.
And it doesn't feel like any of that is particularly disturbing. And in fact, the central message of the film is about living your life when you're in it.
That's great. See, that's kind of what I was wondering about, because a lot of times with this, does it seem like it's the afterlife is more a place everyone goes, similar to more like Jewish theology where you all go to the same place when you die?
It certainly does.
Okay.
There's a mention of hell, but they don't even for a moment talk about it or acknowledge that hell is a thing. It just like there's an afterlife.
All right.
And souls go there after they die.
All right.
And we never see heaven or hell.
So, all right.
It's by Pete Docter, who did Up and Inside Out, which are two of Pixar's just most emotionally resonant films.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I still have yet to see Inside Out.
Inside Out is just fucking amazing because it starts in a way that you just don't expect in it. And it effectively, as a friend of the show, Bill Steitler, says, the entire arc of the film, the only thing that is at stake is a 12-year-old girl's happiness.
Oh,
that's it.
That's kind of cool.
The entire story is, will this 12-year-old girl be happy or not?
All right.
So Soul is oddly, again, the stakes in Soul are not earth-shattering and earth-shatteringly high. They're effectively, will this one soul realize happiness or accept their life? And will another soul accept life?
Interesting.
So it's a really cool concept. I liked it a lot.
So Soul is streaming on. I know it's. Is it on
Disney? Netflix?
Is it on Disney Plus? Okay.
Yeah, it was on Disney Plus free, I believe, when it was released in theaters.
Oh wow!
So same as Onward was. Last year,
which is the next film I want to talk about. Onward came out in 2020. Pretty much at the beginning of the pandemic was when it was released.
Yeah. This is one of the first ones where it was like, quick, stream it.
Yeah. And it's about, and everybody in the film is mythological creatures. It's like trolls and other, varying creatures of myth.
Wizards.
But like culturally and sort of technologically, they are on par with us.
Yeah,
now.
Modern day America, I would say. Yeah.
And they've kind of forgotten about magic.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Yep. And it follows two brothers, and their father dies, and they're very sad, and they're trying to, like, basically, it's they're discovering about their dad, really. It's like they're learning about who their dad was, in a way, because it's not that they didn't know him, but, you get that idea of, like, you don't really get to know who your parents are as adults until you're an adult, right?
The one son was too young to know his dad at all,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like a road trip movie where they're trying to... Their dad is left behind effectively a spell that will bring him back to life for a day.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make this spell work.
And they're trying to do it for the little one, the one who has never really got, because his older brother is like, you got it. Oh man, dad was so great. You got to meet dad. He was so great.
The
like,
older brother's Chris Pratt, right?
I think so. I'm looking to see the voice cast now.
Yeah.
Because Tom Holland is the little one.
Yeah.
Yep, Chris Pratt's his older brother. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is their mom.
Mm-hmm.
Octavia Spencer is a manticore.
Yeah.
She runs the tavern.
Yeah. The manticore.
Ali Wong. There's Tracy Ullman, Wilmer Valderrama. There's a lot of good voices that you'll recognize in there. I thought it was cute. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because it was the beginning of the pandemic and feelings were so raw. And the idea that someone might be gone and we would never see them again was very present in my mind. And it felt good. It felt the idea that you would go to all those lengths to bring someone back just so that you could, like, get to hug them and get to tell them that you love them. It really resonated with me because there are times, I've lost people where I would, I wish I could go back just to have 1 minute, right? Even that 1 minute to say, just so you know, I'm really going to miss you, right? And I think it really resonated with me for that reason at the time. I wonder if I would feel the same if I watched it again.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah?
Just fine.
Just fine.
I enjoyed it. I don't regret watching it. It was funny. But I feel like very early in the movie, I thought that, I get it. The older brother's the dad now. Basically, the movie can be summed up as, like, you're the dad now, dog. Like,
sure. Yeah.
I mean, there was more to it than that. But the thing about it is, if I'm evaluating on, like, a spectrum of Pixar movies, mm-hmm. Onward is more towards the bottom half.
Yeah.
And Soul is more towards the top half. But, you know, the thing I have to admit is any movie that involves a father that dies when kids are young wrecks me.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, sobbing mess wrecks me. I cannot watch Big Fish. Because that movie is all about losing your dad, and the dad is the storyteller. My dad was such a great storyteller. It was such a big part of who he was. It's like that movie just, again, sobbing mess.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
What?
But and Onward did the same thing. So well, I haven't watched it again.
Yeah.
I thought it was good, but I probably will not watch it very often.
Sure. One thing I will say that I liked about it is that you very often get urban fantasy. You don't often get suburban fantasy. And so, like, most of the time when you are, it's like, oh, it's our world, but it's a fantasy world. It's always like the gritty streets of a dark city, like it, like Pratchett,
this
right?
This is the, you know, gritty streets like, of Edina.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Dresden takes place in Chicago.
Exactly.
Right.
It's in the city, and there's city stuff. Not like, oh, gosh, kids, okay, well, don't forget to bring your lunches to your nice, nice, safe school and take the minivan. You know,
yeah.
it felt for me like my childhood,
sure,
in that sense of, like, you know, well, yeah,
the Manticore is what, like, working at Chili's basically,
yeah,
right? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, it's, yeah,
it's crazy crap on the walls, you know, like,
yeah,
it was. So for that, I would say I think that it did some things that were interesting that you didn't see in a lot of urban,
sure,
in a lot of fantasy settings. So that,
yeah,
there was some novelty there. Novelty is
there.
Novelty.
There you go.
I do want to go back just for a second to Soul.
Yeah.
One thing that,
yeah,
I think is important about that film is it casts its lot with a black man as the main character.
Oh, yeah.
So that is something that Pixar really had not done up to that point, and I thought that was a good thing to do.
And some people had a problem with it being another example of, you know, not just letting black characters be black, but in fact they have to be transformed into some animal or form or something that, you know, strips them of that part of their, you know, physical identity. But other people were saying, like, well, it's representation. Like, not all representation is going to be perfect. Like, it seemed like there was some complicated feelings about that. I don't have an opinion.
I am not a person of color, and therefore I cannot say that I have a fair way to judge that. To me, well, I'm not a person of color.
I think it's worth noting that, you know, people of color that had opinions on it had pros and cons to say about that representation. And that's worth maybe looking at. A listener going and checking out some of those, like, blog posts about it and stuff.
So those are the two Pixar movies that came out.
I mean,
kind of amazing there were two Pixar movies in this time, right? Like, during this pandemic time.
Well, they release about one film a year. And
when did Soul come out?
Soul came out, well, I guess you're right. It came out near the end of 2020. So it was two films in the same year.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, maybe they were planning on spreading that out further, but and it came out sooner. I don't know. But another movie that actually Tim told us to watch and a bunch of people we know were saying to watch. But Nick and I both were like, eh, it just sounds like a dumb kids movie. And I'm glad we watched it. Mitchell's versus the Machines.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly had written that off as just like, I don't. Okay, I was like, oh, but it's the apocalypse. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's probably zombies or something stupid. It's like, oh, it's robots. Okay. Like, you know, whatever. No, it was really funny.
Go ahead.
No, please.
If someone had just said to me, oh, it has a lot of creative overlap with Gravity Falls, I would have been like, oh, fucking, we're watching this day one.
Sure, yes.
Right. I didn't know that at all, but it definitely shows in the comedy.
Also, the animation style is very cool. The fact that they kind of go back and forth between the movie and, you know, her drawings of what's happening.
They mix in. It's like a gumball where they mix in, you know, physical media.
Cell world of gumballs.
Yeah, they mix in cell animation and 3D animation and even like almost like scans of.
Paper.
Like yeah. Right.
Tim, what did you think of that movie?
I thought it was delightful. I had heard a lot of friends had said, go ahead and watch this. And so it was a family movie. We all sat down, watched it together. Boy, we laughed a lot.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I loved the two like robots that turn good, quote unquote.
Yeah.
They're just kind of cute and funny. And, And it almost
Beck Bennett.
The perfect family. The perfect Instagram family that was their neighbors.
Yes.
That was really, and I liked that it wasn't, they didn't try to do like a, well, actually their life isn't so perfect. It is.
Their life is perfect.
But they're just like, but they were also happy for their neighbors, you know, like even
but they were also
neighbors.
Super nice.
Yeah.
And that was, they were played by John Legend and I'm forgetting his
Chrissy
wife's
Teigen.
Name. Yeah.
Yes.
So John Legend and Chrissy
Which
Teigen.
They are Instagram couple.
It was like the perfect stunt casting ever. There's also, and representation is interesting, there's also a moment at the end of the film where we learn that our main character is gay, and it was never a thing.
It was never brought up, or at least by.
I mean, it seems pretty obvious that before the shit goes down, she's into girls.
Yeah, I thought so.
Like
I was like, I didn't read the code.
But it's not overt.
It's not overt, and I mean that's a good
until thing. The end. Yeah.
I agree. They didn't. It wasn't like a
And it was like, super, oh my god, it's a robot apocalypse, and you're gay.
Yeah, it was super cute, and like the robot apocalypse part was done well, not in a it's one of those things that can be overdone, you know, in a way where it's like, oh, now the washing machine's gonna bite my hand, you know. But it didn't have any of that. It didn't feel like a morality tale on we depend too much on machines, everyone. Like it didn't feel like it had any moral to it other than your family is weird and that's okay and you can be weird together.
Like, and also Elon Musk will get us killed.
I think that was the other... or Zuckerberg. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure who that was.
Yeah.
Big Tech Daddy.
Yeah, right.
Big Tech Daddy.
Bezos. Somebody. Yeah.
Not actually evil, just way dumb.
Yeah.
Just
smart
way dumb.
Not Bezos.
That was Erica Andre was that character, which is surprising to hear his voice in something for, that's, you know, all ages. It cracked me up. Even some stupid, dumb, like there's a lot of internet humor in this show.
Yeah.
They use a song prominently that is, you know, one of the first big song memes. They use it a couple times, and it's the pug dog that hacks the robot brains by, you know,
is it bread, pig,
or whatever it is. Yep. I can't even remember.
It does not make sense.
Yeah.
I liked I do like that, you know, in almost every robot apocalypse story that this happens, and I don't hate it, it's not overdone to me, is the whole like, well, I created this robot to think and feel and act just like us, and then I threw it away when I was done with it. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I treated it like shit.
Yeah, I taught the robot emotions, and then I crushed its heart.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, how does that ever go right?
When he's like, you know, in love, this little, you know, phone person will say goodbye to her and just throws him over his shoulder.
It's like, how can you be a nerd and not recognize what you're just about to do?
Yeah.
Our biggest critique is at the end of the film, they take their daughter to college, and all the kids are like, hey, hi, whatever. It's like everybody at college would be like, it's the people that saved the world.
One kid remarks on it, I think.
Yeah, like, it was like they couldn't go anywhere without being mobbed by people because they saved every one of their lives.
The kid's never going to pay for a drink in college.
Never.
Yeah.
I will also say that one thing I did not like, I really did not like the tension coming from her dad being like, I'm not going to let you go. And so I canceled your plane ticket.
Oh,
you're not going
so
to college.
Fucked up.
You're going to miss that first week of bonding with everybody. I was so mad that
her dad was a fucking asshole.
I was like getting ready to be like, I don't know if I want to watch this anymore. I don't like watching narcissists trample their children.
Pat was really pissed about that too. And I think to be fair, Pat was like, she liked the movie, but she thought the way they depicted the father, he came off as just super awful.
And he never learned his lesson about it. I don't feel like he really learned that what he did was wrong, because to him, he was vindicated. They got to spend that time together as a family and they became closer.
I don't know that he specifically figures out that what he did was wrong, but why he did what he did, the cause of that is something that they learn and something they figure out. And that's that, you know, he just doesn't fucking get her and she just doesn't fucking get him. And I think that's something pretty much anyone can sympathize. Anyone that's, who's been a teenager can probably sympathize with that, right?
That's true.
But there's stuff he does way beyond.
I'm not saying it's not fucked up. It's super fucked up.
Yeah, and I just wish that someone had actually said, like, I wish her mom had actually been like, you canceled the plane ticket? Like, that's not okay. And like, they'd had a fight about it instead of her being like, well, your dad's just really sad about you leaving.
I know. Mom needed to take a moment to go, that wasn't okay, honey.
I feel like I wish the mom was more of a character, except for at the very end where she kind of, you know, goes full combat mode or whatever.
Right, because her kids are threatened, so now she's combat mom.
I really liked the and sympathized with the whole, you know, being a nerd and having the internet as a teenager, and then your parent just being like, I just don't fucking get what you're talking about, or I just don't understand what you are excited about. Yeah. Like, I definitely feel
but
that.
He wouldn't even watch her movies. Well, I mean, what kind of shit-ass father is that?
It's because he didn't get them, because it's internet humor, and because it's just too random, and he didn't...
It's bullshit.
At least
my kids come and show me something that they produced in school that I know is going to be shit because it's produced by a 12-year-old. I still watch it, you know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Yeah, it's just like... 100%.
So Mitchell vs. Machine, despite issues we had with it, very funny. Honestly, probably the best of, I liked it the best out of, I would say, out of everything we're talking about today, I liked it second best because we're going to finish with the one I liked the best. But
you get to pick,
I get to pick because I'm hosting today. Yeah, but I really liked Mitchell vs. the Machines. And obviously there is I think a lot of listeners will sympathize, if not empathize, with the characters.
It's the funniest movie.
It is the funniest.
Definitely. Absolutely. The best.
But finally, we're going to wrap up talking about the movie that actually was just very recently released for free to all Disney Plus subscribers, and that is Raya and the Last Dragon.
But that can't be finally. Aren't we talking about Wolfwalkers?
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Because you two haven't seen it.
That's why I totally forgot. Wolfwalkers is a show, not a movie.
It's a movie.
Is it?
It's a movie.
Everything we've been over this. It's a show. All right.
It's a movie. It was released on... HBO Max, I think.
Apple Plus.
And actually we watched it because Alex had heard about it, and Alex is like, I really want to watch this. And we were going to watch it the day it came out. Pat and I were both like, because for whatever reason, we got the impression from Alex that it was an anime, and we aren't super into anime, but he was like, I really want to watch this as a family. And we're like, okay, we'll watch it. We were not excited about it at all because we're like, anime, whatevs. It could be good, right? There's anime I like, but I just don't get into it that much. It turns out, no, it's by the same people that made The Book of Kells.
Yeah, the Selkie thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in this case, it's an Irish film, Irish folklore. The animation is cel animation. I mean, probably not cel animation, but 2D animation.
That's what it looked like,
With the style very much looking like drawings from an illuminated manuscript.
Yeah, it looked like old Celtic art.
More like tapestries.
Yeah.
If Book of Kells is more like the art from the illuminated manuscripts, the Wolfwalkers animation is more like tapestries that you would find in old castles. So the animation really, really interesting, and it's this story of a little girl who makes friends with another little girl who's a wolfwalker, and wolfwalkers are characters that are wolves by night and people by day.
Which is like Irish kind werewolves. Of like werewolves, but like it's different because they're not only wolves at the full moon, and it's
and
not like a violent thing.
And they're fully
thing.
Sentient.
Yeah,
they're aware
of being wolves.
Yeah. And they have no Krenos form, so it's just one or the other.
They don't go off on violent sprees that they wake up naked and covered in blood and they don't know what they did. It's not like that.
So you've got a town that wants to kill off all the wolves, and then you've got the wolf walkers that are trying to save it, and then you've got this, and the way you become a wolf, if you get bit, so it's got a werewolf bit to it. If you get bit, you turn into a wolf walker.
A werewolf bit.
And the girl's father is like the guardian of the town, and he's played by Sean Bean, so he spent the entire movie being sure he was going to die and just waiting for it to happen. It's just... The animation is different than anything that you will see. The storytelling is really, really well done. And it was probably my favorite animated film that came out last year. I just thought it was beautiful. and a really, really cool story and different than a lot of the stories that you see in animation.
I tried to watch it, but I got about 15, 20 minutes in and I was super bored. So maybe I should just give it a chance and finish it. I don't know. It felt slow and the animation wasn't, I didn't love it. So I think maybe I just need to give it another shot. At least the beginning is a lot of silence and a lot of like longing. It seemed like a lot of looks, people like giving each other looks and talking quietly is what the impression I got from it. So I just didn't get into the story right away. So maybe there's more story, like a little, maybe it's like The Good Place and I turned it off just before the hook, right? Like,
I can't tell you where the hook was, but yeah. I don't remember, but I did really like it, and I did not mind the silence, and I don't mind those kind of things in my movies. But it is weird for an animated film to allow things like silence to exist.
It's interesting that you don't mind that kind of stuff, but you don't usually like anime, because anime to me, that's like a hallmark of it, right? Is like lots of long silences, lots of, you know, heavy pauses.
Depends on the genre and the movies, creative team
Mostly the stories in anime that just don't hook me in.
Was there anything about Wolfwalkers that you didn't like, or did you like it all pretty much completely?
Well, I mean, Sean Bean lived. I wasn't nuts about that. There's a little bit of what do I want to say? It never becomes a romance, but the two girls, you know, one of the girls only has a mother, one of the girls only has a father. Mm. And in the movie, they're like a family, and there seems to be a romantic link between the mother and the father that I'm kind of like, well, I didn't need to be there. But it is just at the end of the film.
You're gonna parent trap them?
It wasn't like a big old romance building throughout the entire movie.
That's
but I wasn't, because that ending's kind of cliche. But other than that, no, I liked it a lot.
Cool. So Wolfwalkers on Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, well, have to check that out. I think it could have been, you know, because sometimes you can start watching a movie and you're just not in the right headspace, you know?
Yeah,
just
totally.
It just doesn't jive. And then later you go back and you're like, what was I thinking? This is fucking amazing. Like, so I will definitely give it another shot. Okay, but now.
But now.
Now we're going to talk about Raya and the Last Dragon.
Raya and the Last Dragon, right, which is now free
on Disney Plus. Yes, now it's free on Disney Plus. To those who are subscribers, it is now available. It cost $30 up until now, I believe, or was it
It was $30, which, you know, I decided not to pay it. I decided I could wait. Mm-hmm. But if we were going to go watch it in the theater, I would have spent more than $30.
For sure.
So I didn't feel like it was a ridiculous ask.
Also, $30 gets you unlimited views.
Right. 24 hours or something like that, isn't it? Or do you just have it to watch?
If you pay the premium price, you get
so
Raya and the Last Dragon for 3 months for free.
So if you've got your little girl who wants to watch Raya and the Last Dragon three times a day.
I know some people have like an ethical problem with a streaming service that you're paying for having, you know, this premium content that you pay extra for. Honestly, I think it's because it's opt-in and because it's only that way for like a month or two before it comes that way, you know, for free anyway. I don't have a problem with it. I think that it's an accessibility concern, right? There are people that can't get to the theaters even when it's not a pandemic to see things like that, and having an option for those folks is pretty great. And I think that, you know, we paid for Mulan because my brother wanted to watch it. I think his wife wanted to watch it. They wanted to watch it. And we share a Disney Plus account, so we bought it because it was the first thing and we wanted to try it out. And we didn't for Raya, but we watched that just now. Mm-hmm. And we didn't for Cruella, but we have seen Cruella anyway.
Huh.
Yeah, I will say... So Raya and the Last Dragon, I fucking loved it. And a big part of that is because I love Awkwafina.
Oh, yeah.
I think she is... I love everything she's in. We watched that terrible movie, Breaking News in Yuma County. She's in that, and she's even that she's good. You know, like with terrible dialogue, and it's such a bad movie. But on paper,
great movie.
Yeah, but she's great. And so, Raya and the Last Dragon is a new fairy tale.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I don't believe it's based in any actual mythology, as far as I know, but it is about five water dragons that were like a family, they were the last dragons as dragons were taken from the earth, and there was a horrible curse that got released.
Turned to stone.
The booms, or whatever.
They got turned to stone, yeah.
can't remember that, what are that they're called, the brood.
It's
a word like
the
that.
Ominous purple.
The ominous things that turn everybody to stone.
Smoke monsters.
The darkness. Yeah,
the darkness turned everyone to stone, and the dragons were fighting against it valiantly, but they were overtaken, and then they poured all their magic into the one dragon, which is Sisu. Sisu, and she tried to explode it, and then she's got her gem. So we start the movie with her gem has the last of the dragon magic, and Raya's family they live in Heart. She and her chief father, they are tasked with being the guardians of this dragon magic. And all of the other worlds are fighting, and they want to steal the magic because they think that Heart is prospering because they have the magic. Classic, we want what you have, and that's why
it's, you know, the whole theme of the movie is like, why can't we just get along?
Yes. Like, it used to all be one nation, and now they're separate and broken and
angry and fighty.
Yeah. It's also Kelly Marie Tran is Rhea is the protagonist, and I feel like I don't want to make this sound like she got cast because of this. She's obviously a great actor and she does really great in this role, but also I appreciate Disney giving Kelly Marie Tran another opportunity to do something with them as like we're sorry maybe we didn't have your back so much when for Star Wars hate that you got, so here is another opportunity to succeed.
So at least you can be a Disney princess,
right?
If she's a princess, it's hard to say, but anyway.
And the idea, so if you recently watched Last Week Tonight, John Oliver did a thing about Asian Americans and like what that even means and what it all encompasses,
and
Pacific Islanders.
And
Pacific
Islanders. API. Yes. Yep.
And how many countries and cultures are represented under this like blanket term, right?
Right.
And honestly, you saw a lot of different Asian culture representation in Raya and the Last Dragon. Like different, there was from the architecture to the styles of dress, to the different foods and customs that they
How people look, their height, their skin tone, their
shape.
Yep.
There's
a variety of Asian people.
Yes, it wasn't like Mulan where it's like everyone looks the same.
Everyone's Chinese.
They were all Chinese, which right. is...
So that, but they also all, I mean, I as near as I can tell, all of the voice acting roles were Asian people.
Alan
Tudyk plays her...
Tuk-Tuk.
Tuk-Tuk, her pet and mount.
So,
the one who just kind of goes...
Because he's the Disney mascot.
So every time you heard a little animal purr, that was him.
That was Alan Tudyk, who went to Juilliard. But I think that's great. I mean, honestly, like...
They did the same thing with Mulan. They cast everybody in Mulan as Pacific Islanders.
But honestly, 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case. 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case. You know, you would have had, you know, some white woman being cast as her mother's spirit or something, right? Or, you know,
ScarJo.
Would have been like, oh no, but it's Glenn Close. Of course she's going to play the dragon, right? Like
everybody in Aladdin is a white person.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's amazing to me that this movie has such awesome representation and like, I hope there's a lot of really great voice actors I wasn't aware of. Gemma Chan, who plays Namari, I hadn't heard of her before, but Namari was a great character.
Yeah, Gemma Chan's actually been in a lot of stuff. She's in Crazy Rich Asians, which is a absolutely fantastic movie if you're into rom-coms.
She's
going to
be in The Eternals.
And if you're not.
She's Cersei.
Yeah. She's in The Eternals.
Which she is that's the lead woman of The Eternals. Mm-hmm. Well, sort of.
She also
she's the romantic lead.
She also was something in Captain Marvel.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Minerva. I think.
Minerva. Yeah.
Interesting.
Minerva.
Oh, okay. Irva. Yeah.
Because they are the Kree, and everyone has a hyphen.
I liked Benedict Wong as the big beefy dude, Tong.
Yeah.
Like the warrior kind of cold climate guy.
Did anybody think to like look at her collar? You're all like thinking I'm the big dumb guy, but I at least tried to figure out what her name was.
Con Baby and the Monkeys.
Little Noi. Yeah. That's Thalia Tran. I'm trying to see how old she is, but
actually, my favorite thing about that, the con baby, is that's what they called the baby in the subtitles. It's like every time she said something, it's con baby.
That's great. That was when it was like, oh, a baby. I can't stop her. Oh, dang it. She's alone. Okay. And it just totally taken. Like it was, yeah, it was really cute. And at first I thought that it was going to be when Raya's like, well, here's the lowdown on all the other nations. And this one, these people are assassins and they're backstabbing. And these people are all like grifters because they live in the city and you got to watch your purse. And, you know, these people all live in the frozen north and they're giant, horrible beasts. And I was like, oh, she's going to travel to each of these lands and learn how wrong she was. Nope. Like, that was great. Like they all had a, yeah.
But each person in their little crew on the boat is from a different tribe.
Yes.
So she's from Heart.
Yep.
And Tong is from Spine or whatever.
And
then Bong, the kid, the little chef kid,
is from Tail.
And then the Con Baby is from another one.
Yeah.
Too. So
yeah, Con Baby is Talon.
Yeah. And then at the very end, the antagonist who joins them is the last piece to put it all together. So they end up with one from
Fang.
Each.
Yeah, she's from Fang.
Yeah, so they end up with one from each.
See,
so kind of though.
Nobody named any of their tribe's head. That's what they needed to do.
Oh.
Yeah.
They clearly did not have one.
I guess what I mean is I thought it was going to be a more schmaltzy theme like, oh, I was wrong. We're actually all alike.
My prejudices were...
Instead it was, we're not all alike, but that's okay. We can all still get along and be one people, even though we have such differences. Like,
right.
I liked that.
Sure, sure, sure.
I also really, I really liked the kid, the chef kid, on the boat. And the part was my favorite part was there's like, okay, quick, get away. And he puts the pole in the water and they slowly move the barge and it moves like a foot. Cause I was like, yeah, how exactly is this pole barge going to get away real fast?
It turns out you need a dragon.
You need a dragon. Yeah. Human Rhea human Sisu was very funny looking. Yeah. And she looked like the dragon looked like Awkwafina, but then human Sisu really looked like Awkwafina.
You know, it was really funny. We're watching the movie and Pat's like looking it up to find out who's playing various characters. And I don't know what site she looked on, so I'm not blaming her, but she's like, this is really weird. She's like, Sisu isn't played by Awkwafina. It's played by Kelly Marie Tran. And I'm like, well, damn, Kelly Marie Tran does a really good Awkwafina.
Yeah, right?
Sounds then, just like her.
And then we get to the credits, and it's like, well, Sisu's Awkwafina. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Kelly Marie Tran sounds like Awkwafina at all. I don't know where Pat found this information. I don't know, but...
It's that... what was it? You were just talking about being in costume as the
human Sisu.
Yeah, it's Tim. Have you seen The Dragon Prince on Netflix? It's the Avatar of the Last Airbender people's fantasy.
Oh yeah,
show.
Yeah,
yeah.
Human Rayla
when she's dressed up as a human and pretending to
puts on gloves so she can have her fifth finger.
And she's like I like to argue and fight with everyone, and I'm destroying the environment around me to get ahead or whatever.
I don't wash myself. I'm Human Rayla.
Yeah, it's it very much reminded me of that.
Their big floppy sweater. There are so many cute cosplays that could come from this show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I really hope that I see some people, like, friend of the show, Mooks. I really want to see her, like, in the big floppy sweater with, like, the rainbow Sisu wig. I think she could pull it off.
That'd
be super cute.
There is that. We talked about this before we started recording, but there's a moment when, what's the antagonist's name again?
Namara.
When the Namara is confronting
Namari.
Yeah. When she's confronting Rhea, and Rhea refers to her as Princess Undercut. And I genuinely and honestly heard her say Princess Undercunt.
To the point where he was like, did you hear that?
What?
Like, in a Disney movie? It's like the dick in the
movie. I was like, Undercut, of course. It had to be Undercut, but... Still, though.
Yeah, still. All the hair was really good in this movie.
Like, yeah.
The floatiness of it, the textures of it, but also some really cool hairstyles.
When she was in her dragon form swimming in the water.
Oh, my God.
When she'd come out of the water or go back into the water, the way her hair behaved was very great.
That water looked real. It looked like they somehow...
It's kind of amazing how far they've come with water.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, water and hair are both like notoriously difficult for animation because we have... you know, we don't just have hair. We have, you know, 50,000 hairs that move in independently.
Yeah. And water actually has to be created as like tiny BBs, basically.
It's as volume. Molly, you commented a couple times during this movie about how much you liked the fighting. I think you even said it was your favorite animated fighting of all time.
It was the best animated fighting I've ever seen. There were some fights between Raya and Namari, where the camera was shaking around like it was a live action fight.
Yeah.
And like the way that she was animated as coming at Namari, or as Namari coming at her, there was like rush. Like, so it really felt like it had a lot of motion. Like, it was just amazing. Like, honestly, go back and watch those fight scenes and tell me I'm wrong, because I can't think of anything else I've seen animated that had fights like that, that looked that real and were that quick and fast. It was really great. It reminded me, the fighting, because it was, you know, obviously a lot of hand-to-hand martial art style fighting when they didn't have weapons. It's like everything Iron Fist should have fucking been. That's all I could think. I was like, see, that's how this is a fight.
Starting with an Asian lead and not ending there. Yeah, right.
So my one critique about the movie, and I liked it a lot, but Pat and Devin both pointed this out, and I agree. Namari did not have a good redemption arc. Namari was awful. Namari, like, backstabbed at the beginning. She backstabbed in the middle. And she backstabs again at the end. And she tries to say that it's Raya's fault that Sisu got shot with a crossbow. But if Namari didn't fucking bring one, it wouldn't have been a fucking problem.
Yeah.
And
but if she had trusted the dragon...
Raya should have trusted the dragon.
But it's not her fault that she got shot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not Raya's fault. Right. And so there's this confrontation where at the end of it, Namari's like, it's your fault she got shot because you know, it's like, no, it's your fault. You brought the fucking crossbow.
Honestly, yeah. And I think, too, I wish that and I understand that Raya was, you know, believe me, I understand that Raya was like heartbroken, hurt in that deep down childhood way from going from a new friend I really like, who we like all the same stuff, who just broke the world, right? Because I trusted her.
Yeah.
So it makes sense she doesn't trust anybody anymore. But also, like, I wish that she had seen what I saw as a viewer when Namari first saw Sisu. And it was like, her heart stopped, and I wish that they had given her a little more time. I think that a lot of the stuff later would have been avoided. You know, obviously,
that's why they couldn't do it. And I didn't mind Raya, because Raya should have hated Namari.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Namari broke the world.
Right.
And betrayed this girl who's like found a friend of her own age for the first time.
Yeah.
And then this friend just betrays her in the worst conceivable
way. She and her mother.
Yeah, she is a tool of her mother. Her mother is pushing her hard.
Sure, but from Raya's point of view, you don't know that.
Right.
You don't see that interaction between the daughter and the mother. You just see what the daughter did to you. And at the end, when it's like, okay, well, Namari's the one who puts the stone back together, who the fuck else is going to do it?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, I mean, it's not a big redemption moment. It's a, well, I'm going to die if I don't do this.
They kept going, why aren't they just like trying to assemble it as they get the pieces? Why are they just holding them in a jumble?
Well, and at the very end, when the four of them turned into stone, and Namari's the last one with it left, she turns to go again.
I know.
And then she goes, she's like, ah, I guess I might as well put it back together since I'm so fucked anyway.
Yeah.
But like, again, she goes for it.
I will say, I kind of like that, because not everybody gets redeemed and not
but
everybody
she's supposed to have been redeemed.
Do you think so?
Yes.
Yeah, at the end,
that movie wanted us to feel good about her redemption arc. And I think they did a bad job.
I don't think her mother got redeemed either, but they made us supposed to feel
good.
Her
mom sure didn't get
redeemed.
Well, yeah.
You know, like, I think it was more of a, everyone finally was like, you know what, I guess actually this was a problem, you know, but
they give you the opportunity to see Namari being uncertain, but then she still fails
at every
conceivable point. It's like you want to watch her make the right decision, not after she decides to leave and then is like, well, maybe I shouldn't, because they all sacrificed themselves for me.
Yeah. I spent way too much time thinking about the physics of Tuk Tuk's harness and saddle. Like, I caught myself at one point and I was like, well, Molly, if this is where you draw the line,
yeah.
We have this joke in my family of, well, here's where it gets a little unbelievable, you know, because at first said it was like my dad being like, well, I don't think his claws would be able to hold on to the rock like that. You know, my mom's like, the lions are talking, but that's where we have the issue. You know? It's like, here's where it gets a little unbelievable. I don't know if that saddle, I mean, how is that, where's the axis on that?
How is he spinning?
Like, how is it even spinning? How is he just like going from, you know what? Don't even, let's just,
whatever.
There's dragons. Let's just not worry about it.
Yeah.
It's a pill bug.
Mammal.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's an armadillo hedgehog.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what it is, but it's like right there.
Very cute.
There's a bug that farts, and then the farts explode.
All I can say is, I forgot about the exploding bug farts. There's these bugs, and if their butts start lighting up, you know you got to get away because they're about to fart out fireworks.
Yes. Yeah.
I did like that.
Farter works.
I would like to say, at one point I was like, move over, Figment. There's a new dragon in merchandise.
Yeah, right?
It's like, I know what we do. We just take that Figment statue and we paint it up. It looked like a Sisu statue.
Yeah.
Anyway, Raya and the Last Dragon, I really liked it. We seemed to all very much like it. Well, you can watch that on Disney+. Now it's time for five questions.
Five questions.
We have one final set of five questions from Adulterated Evil.
And that's all we've got.
We have one more after this.
Oh.
All right.
Thank goodness.
So Adulterated Evil has sent us in another set of questions, and I all right.
This
so
is a risky set, if
I
remember.
I'm going to read his preamble. I am a Farscape fan. I watched it in the original run, and it's probably the show I have rewatched more than any other. It's funny, romantic, action-packed, and moving. Not to mention that as a guy raised on a farm in Georgia, John's occasional dips into redneck Southern stereotype speaks to me. So let's get to the questions. All right.
I'm excited to talk about Farscape.
Question one. Did you watch Farscape? If so, did you like it or was it not for you? And if not, why not?
I gave it a shot as it was airing.
Okay.
It was not for me.
How many episodes would you think you watched?
At least one, but probably two.
All right. You're one up on me.
And honestly, the puppets were very silly.
Okay, I didn't even know there were puppets in Farscape.
How the main character ends up where he is right off the bat, didn't get me.
Tim, did you watch Farscape?
No, Farscape was on cable. I have never had cable.
All right.
And so the only way I would have watched it is by getting the DVDs, and we never did.
Farscape's the one with the white lady with the white hair and the black eyes, right? With the pale.
Does she appear in an episode after the first episode? Because I'm not going to be only up
there. Honestly, I'm just trying to think of like if I have seen stills, and I have not watched Farscape.
The answers to this series are going to be so disappointing.
Yeah. Farscape and Babylon 5 are like my sci-fi blind spots for shows. Yeah.
I didn't watch that. I was probably too busy watching Lex. All right.
Oh, gross.
I'm going to assume because you're all intelligent, lovely, wise, and kind people, world-renowned for your generous and skillful lovemaking, that you said you loved Farscape. With all that being true, who was your favorite character and name their best scene? If you didn't watch Farscape, take this time to proselytize to me about a show you love but the mainstream let pass by. So what's a show you love but the mainstream let pass by?
The Middleman.
The Middleman, I agree. That's a good
The Middleman one. Was, it's based on a comic. It's different than the comic in a lot of ways. It is about, it was on, what was it, ABC Family. And so everyone just skipped it because it was ABC Family when that was a cable station. But it is about a middleman who cleans up all the things that regular society doesn't want to deal with, and his new apprentice, and it's kind of a monster of the week. It's great. It's super funny. And when I bring it up, most people are like, I don't even know what that show is.
Yep. All right, Tim?
I confess that TV is not something... I didn't watch a lot of TV, honestly, until the pandemic and being able to watch so much more of it streaming, but... One series that I really enjoyed that I think didn't get a lot of appreciation was Batman Beyond. Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series are great, but Batman Beyond takes the Batman genre in a different direction, and I thought it was pretty fucking cool.
I think a lot of people slept on Batman Beyond because it followed, immediately followed the animated series. And the animated series is so fucking good, and Batman Beyond is very different. And so it's like why so many people hate Teen Titans Go. It's because it's not Teen Titans. And that show left, and a different show came back, and it's not the same, and that makes me uncomfortable.
And there's a film, a movie, the Batman Beyond movie, Return of the Joker.
Yeah.
It's disturbing as fuck.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah.
I'm going to say Better Off Ted.
Oh, yeah.
Better Off Ted is fucking hilarious. It is a dark comedy. It is a satire of corporate America, of living, of a company that does like science, corporate science.
Like basically. A DuPont or something.
Yeah. Like they're building a better world through science, but they're bad. They're bad people.
Like it's still a corporation.
Yeah. And there are two scientists who you follow. The main Ted is a single father who works in like the advertising or marketing, or you know, he's corporate. Portia de Rossi is in it. She's fucking amazing.
Like, yeah.
It's very funny.
It is.
Most people I know have not watched it. So Better Off Ted. All right. Question three.
Also not Farscape. Sorry.
I'm assuming I'm saying this name right. John Crichton. Might be Crichton.
I think
Crichton.
John Crichton was always making pop culture references in the show, often confusing his shipmates. This is in Farscape, everyone. What was your favorite example of this in Farscape? Mine was both times he used one of Stone Cold Steve Austin's catchphrases, a can I get a hell yeah? If you're still lacking the milk of human kindness, you can tell me any example from a different show that you like that contains a similar pop culture reference. So I'm going to parse this. What's a show you like that had a pop culture reference in it that you liked?
In five seasons of Community, each of those seasons, they do a paintball episode. Mm-hmm. And four of them are really good. Four of them are excellent. And they are all themed differently. To be like a 28 Days Later or Die Hard or like a Western one or like a post-apocalyptic one or one that is done as a Ken Burns documentary about the Civil War. They are all incredibly funny. They are all themselves a pop culture reference, but also steeped in them within the episodes. Those are fantastic.
I am racking my brain and having a really hard time coming up with anything. Tim?
Coming up with a unique reference like that is very hard for me. Let me just say that I've recently been trying to convince people to watch Young Frankenstein because it is a fantastic pop culture reference to the original Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really answers the question or not, but I'm just saying Young Frankenstein kicks ass. Go watch it.
I will say if you're a big Stephen King fan, Misery show, it's not Misery, it's... It's got a Misery season, but it's called Castle Rock.
It's so good.
Hulu is really good and also has a lot of little Stephen King references dropped throughout it that can be pop culture-y in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so that's about... I know there's been other things, but I can't call them to mind.
I just can't come up with a specific moment.
I feel like every time I watch Young Frankenstein, I find something new to laugh at.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. It's endlessly hilarious.
It's so
there is one scene that's a real problem.
Well, yes, yes.
Other than that.
Question four. As mentioned in previous questions, I love invented language. I especially like fictional curse words. What is your favorite curse from pop culture? Let's say a fictional, I think he means a fictional curse word or something. Mine is from The Expanse in Belter Creole. They say Pashang, which kind of means like fucking or hell or goddamn. So people will be like, Pashang, yeah, or these Pashang innas, you know. Yeah. And it comes out, it's got really similar to like fucking where it's got a good start and a fricative, but like Pashang, yeah, you know, like, I like it. It comes off the tongue and I sometimes say it by accident.
In the Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson, the world Roshar is dominated by this magical storm that does loops around the world. And so there, a lot of the language and culture is, you know, storm oriented. And so storm itself is a swear.
Storm off.
Yeah. This storming asshole over here or like,
oh, I'm storming, starving. Over here.
It's storm off and all that.
Him.
Yeah. It is kind of a, Swiss Army knife swear word in that world.
My favorite fake swear word, and I can't tell you where it comes from, but I know it's not original to me. It came from somewhere. It's fark. I just like saying frack? Fark. No, FARC. I like saying FARC.
I don't know FARC. I've only heard FRAC.
I know FARC.com, and that's about...
Interesting. I don't know. Interesting. I don't know where it came from, but I like FARC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear a lot Farkin of people say FRAC because it's Mother from Farker. Battlestar, but like...
Sure.
Farker is even funnier. I like that.
I don't know.
That's good. All right. Question five. Farscape was canceled without a chance to give its story an end.
Aww.
And then the fans came together and convinced the network to give them a miniseries to tie up some of the biggest loose ends. What other series that ended abruptly would you most like to give 3 more hours to give you closure? Mine is Carnival.
Oh.
Carnival, the HBO series, is incredible. It was very similar to Lost and other shows where it's full of fucking weird-ass psychological, supernatural shit. And at the end of season 2, it was like a cliffhanger where and now let the, you know, may the games begin kind of a thing. And then it just went away. I would love to find out what the fuck was going on at the end of Carnival because it was so good and it was so intriguing and then it was just gone. And it sucked. Deadwood got a movie. Give me a fucking Carnival movie.
I don't have mine yet. Yeah, you go, Nick.
Pushing Daisies.
I almost said Pushing
by Brian
Daisies.
Brian Fuller. Yeah. There is a pie man. I got a pie maker.
Lee Pace.
Who whatever he touches, he brings back to life. And that is sort of the premise of the entire show. It is. Wonderful. It had 2 incredibly good seasons, mm-hmm. and it ended very abruptly. Yeah. And I would love, I would have loved a movie or something to summarize it. I think it's probably too late now.
It was, I mean, honestly, I think it was like 15 years ago, maybe more at this point.
But yeah,
But I would see 15 years on, how's the Pie Man doing? Still doing things to life? Yeah.
They were going to do a spinoff movie. They were going to do a comic mm-hmm. series. They were going to, and nothing happened.
What was the other one that Brian Fuller did while Tim thinks?
the one with the girl who talked to her.
Yeah, the Moldorama line was talking
to her. Oh, shit.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's the same team as did Pushing Daisies. And that was also a really good show that got yanked out from under us with nothing. So.
God dang it. I mean, I rarely get into shows so much that they get yanked out from under me.
Are you a Firefly fan?
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of classics.
Firefly is fine.
Wonderfalls.
That's what it was.
The one that I can think of is Heroes, even though after season 1 it was kind of shitty.
Yeah.
If the series had continued to be good,
mm-hmm.
it's like maybe what I want is 3 hours of really good Heroes after season 1.
I think what you're saying is the show that deserves a really good follow-up is season 1 of Heroes.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's like I realized there was more than one season, but they completely fucked it after season 1.
It started so strong.
Oh, my God. Remember when she went to the Carnival of Freaks and it was
Jesus. Yeah.
This is so dumb.
I may not have been watching by that
point.
I think that might have been
when we were done. I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Welcome, little girl, to our dark carnival where we all have power.
It's like, I read X-Men comics in the 80s, too. Yeah. Fucking
anyway,
click.
Thank you so much, Adulterated Evil. We appreciate it. I just want to point out, Adulterated Evil sent in 3 sets of 5 questions
within the
same day. Like, and we have slowly been going through his questions, and we finally got through
Feel
them.
Free to ask us about another TV show none of us have watched.
Right?
It's fine.
Like,
I'm just saying.
Like, if you don't think you can come up with 5 questions, those were 5 questions about a show we have not any of us seen
one episode of.
And I think we talked for like 15 minutes. So you know what?
We killed it.
We got this.
Yeah, high fives, everybody.
Improv comedians.
Those were real, actual high fives. Did you hear that?
Those were live, unvaccinated high fives that you heard. I almost said like unprotected, and I realized that's
some raw dog high fives.
High fives. Anyway, send your questions to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com, and we will do our best to answer them, or we'll come up with a way to answer them as best we can. Thank you, Adulterated Evil. We really appreciate you seeing us through these last several weeks and episodes. If you want to follow us on Patreon, we really appreciate that. And if you're a Patreon supporter, you do get your questions put to the top of the line. As long as you actually ask 5 questions and not the same question 5 times.
Yeah.
Make sure that you do ask 5 distinct questions.
Unnamed individual on Patreon that shall not be named, but you know who you are.
Beyond that,
Dave.
We will continue to bring you weekly content. After all, if the pandemic didn't stop us, what could? Don't answer that.
I don't want to know.
Don't answer that. None of us want to know because it's probably one of us dying and we don't want that to happen.
At least not yet. I mean, it's gonna. There's nothing we can do, but
I don't believe that. I refuse to believe that.
I don't believe in God, but I do believe in immortality.
See, the high odds are on Tim and I, but Molly is a dark horse candidate for dying first due to clumsiness.
That's right. I am very accident prone, and I take stupid risks.
True facts.
Thank you for listening.
Maybe your first question should be, which of you will die first?
We really appreciate you putting up with us through the long, dark time of the Zoom audio. We hope that this audio is a better treat for your ears. Maybe it's worse because we're all getting used to how to use a microphone again. But that said,
wop, wop.
Well, I have the high gains. I just want to let you all know that we really appreciate you sticking with us, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
You know what? None of these were as good as Boss Baby.
Oh, oh man.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. God, we don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
geeks without God.
It's just like, oh, she can be something other than funny.